It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo, coming to you live from the Bill Ford Tough Studio.
You know, we spent a lot of time talking about non-sports topics, yeah. Which is fun. It's a lot of, and I think we enjoy it. But there was something that I did see yesterday, and it involves Mike Brown and the Knicks, and whether or not he's the right coach. And it was interesting. There were a couple comments from Jim Boeheim out at the Summer League, and he was very complimentary of Mike Brown as the coach and expects him to do well. But when you start talking about players and coaches and fits and what the coach is going to be trying to do to be different than the previous coach, the number one thing that seems to be coming up over and over and over again is the word fast, playing fast. And whoever is the coach for the Knicks out there in the Summer League, it tried to explain it. It's not just running up and down the court like a chicken with your head cut off, essentially. It's about having the ball in your hands for a half a second and knowing what you're going to do with that ball next, whether it be pass it, whether it be shoot it, you know, something.
Would it be fair to say they want to play more like the Pacers who beat them?
Yes, exactly. But it's not just running up and down the court. It's getting rid of the ball and making quick decisions. Now, the interesting thing from the perspective of Jim Boeheim, who knows more basketball than I'll ever know, is just trying to get guys like Jalen Brunson, who's more of an isolation guy, and Karl Anthony Towns, who's more of an isolation guy, to be able to fit in a system that you're trying to create. And, you know, again, this goes back to the whole situation about trying to find the right coach for the right team. So I thought Tibbs was the right coach. He preached defense. He didn't mind having a little bit of iso ball here and there, but it, you know, wasn't as bad as when Carmelo Anthony was here.
No.
I mean, there was a lot of movement, and I thought that, you know, the guys, as the season went on, started to play better together, and when Mitchell Robinson came back, it seemed like they really had a nice flow of things.
Yeah, I really do believe that the coach has to look at what he has and then get the best out of what he has, as opposed to implementing a system to the players that have played a certain way their entire career. It doesn't mean that they can't improve. Like, I want to see improvements from Karl Anthony Towns. I want to see improvements and more consistency from Mikal Bridges. But we talk about this with offensive coordinators in football, too, that, like, if you're the new offensive coordinator, you got a star wide receiver and you got a quarterback who can throw the ball, but you love running the ball more than throwing the ball, then you're just shooting yourself in the foot. So I just hope that Mike Brown, he does. He's been around. He's smart enough. He's going to see what's working and what's not working with these guys. But I really think that this is not even so much from Mike Brown, even though he had a great offense there in Sacramento. I think that this is coming. This is something that Leon Rose and World Wide West and everybody else talked to Mike Brown about how he saw, or they saw, the Pacers running and beating the Knicks with speed and efficiency, where the Knicks did not look like that, and that was the reason they were eliminated from the playoffs, and they want to be more like the Indiana Pacers.
I could see exactly why they would think that, and certainly I would think that, you know, having a deep bench and playing more players is something that the Pacers obviously accentuated, and something that the Knicks saw, and something that we saw as fans. And it was also a criticism of the way that Tom Thibodeau would handle his roster and how many minutes his guys would be playing. But again, you know, you start limiting the minutes of certain players. If you start taking 5 minutes here, 3 minutes there, 2 minutes, now all of a sudden their numbers start going down. And now people are wondering why their numbers are going down. Well, you wanted me to play more players, and therefore you're not going to have as many opportunities.
Right.
So it's a really delicate balance, especially in the NBA. You know, I mean, a lot of these players, although I think this group of players that the Knicks have, and I do like the two guys that they added.
Oh, I love it.
All right. So they're a better team. They're a deeper team. I don't know if they're necessarily done. You know, they could probably add another player, or they could still make another trade if they wanted to. If that's in the offing, we'll see. But it's just interesting listening to Jim Boeheim talk about now trying to fit Mike Brown in as the coach when you already have a veteran team that is established here. It's like you're not starting over.
No.
You are starting probably, I would say, I'm trying to think, in the last 25 years, this will be the biggest going into a season expectations the Knicks have had in the last 25 years.
Yeah, and I think that last year was that same answer, and now this year is even more so. I think the expectations going into last year were huge.
And that's the thing. I mean, like, so you are, it's like you're the offensive coordinator for Lamar Jackson, or you're the offensive coordinator for Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
Two different guys, two different way that they play, although Lamar has basically refined his passing game to a level that now is commensurate with one, the best players in the league at, that play the position, but he also brings another dynamic that you have to somehow, some way, get involved in the game, where Joe Burrow doesn't have that.
Right.
So the question is, for Mike Brown in this half a second decision making, is Jalen Brunson, or are Jalen Brunson and both Carl Anthony Towns going to be able to play at that pace and the way that he wants to play?
Yeah, and we're going to know right away, I think, in the first month of the season, you know, if that's going to work or not. Like, generally with these teams that are super talented, like, we felt like there was something just a little bit off about the Knicks the entire year. You would see teams, it took a while for the Pacers to get there because they had some injuries, but you saw how good the Celtics and the Cavaliers were for majority of the season. They sort of ran out of gas. I want to see this team just dominate the lesser competition on the schedule and look like the better team, as opposed to struggling in certain aspects and, you know, losing games they shouldn't lose and feel like they're taking a night off, and hearing some of the things we heard from Josh Hart and the selfishness and all those things. This regular season, as much as the regular season doesn't matter, I mean, when you have a new coach and you're back with these two guys you got in last offseason in Towns and Bridges, and everybody knows each other, went through a full season and playoffs together, this regular season and how they play, I think, it matters
a
ton.
All right, so here's the thing. Last year, they bring in Bridges and they bring in Towns, and now all of a sudden, it takes them a while to get going. They got to get used to each other. They got to get used to the system. You know, that the November, December, and January weren't great. It wasn't really until March that we started to really see the team that we, you know, that ended up getting as far as they did in the playoffs. But I'm just telling you, we're going to hear the same thing for the first 3 months of the season. We got to get used to the system. We got to get used to the coaching. We got to get used to the expectation. I mean, like, we're going to hear all that stuff all over again. And if they got off to a little bit of a choppy start, that would not at all surprise me. But it's not also going to make me nervous about the ability for this team to eventually figure it out, what Mike Brown's going to want to do.
Yeah, I mean, once we hit a certain point of the regular season, I will be nervous about it, because, I mean, it sort of came to fruition, some of the issues. Now, they ended up beating the Boston Celtics, and those comebacks were crazy. But, I mean, some of the things and the just disjointed play that we saw that concerned us in the regular season, when they ran into a better offensive team and a deeper team, they lost. So I need to see them be deeper, be better, be more efficient, not completely give up on defense, and Carl Anthony Towns have an MVP-type season. I want to see him at top three in the MVP voting. That's what I want to see.
He's a double-double waiting to happen. We know that. But, you know, the flexing and the lazy getting back on defense and the stupid fouls that we saw in the playoffs, you know, that's got to be non-starter, man. Like, Mike Brown's going to say, enough. You know, you need to be a much better, much rounded, more rounded player than you were. And, you know, it was frustrating watching it. And a lot of that was because of the type of offense that they played. And I think that's what probably bothered Jim Dolan the most.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so.
Like this, you know, you can say whatever you want about Jim Dolan. If somebody is not getting what he thinks is the job done when they should be getting the job done, he's not afraid to pull the plug on that guy.
Sure. I mean, I think that some of the patience that the Yankee fan has had it with their regime and how they hang on to too many guys or whatever is the exact opposite with the Knicks. I mean, they, you know, we had a really good year prior to last year, and they made a massive deal, you know, and getting rid of Randall and DiVincenzo and bringing in Towns and making the trade with all the picks for Mikal Bridges this year. They didn't get to where they wanted to go. They fire the coach. I mean, these have been massive moves.
Dude, I'm saying the same about the hockey team and the basketball team.
Yeah,
when you think about firing the coaches for the hockey team, and then, you know, now ultimately moving away from a number of players that, you know, had been here for years. But I think the Knicks are good enough now, especially with the ads that they've had, to win a championship. I think that that's got to be on the table. They can win a championship if they, of course, stay healthy. The Rangers, not so much. You know, Florida is stacked and loaded, and it is going to be, you know, Florida against everybody else in the Eastern Conference. And again, of course, injuries play a major
fact in whether or not guys will have bounce back years or guys will take the next step to become a better player than they were the year before. And understand, under a new coach, this is what the expectations are, and you got to live up to them, or we're going to move you out of here.
Let's go to Eddie in Springfield, Massachusetts. What's going on, Eddie?
Hi, guys. I want to tell Gio and Boomer that I love you guys. Watch you every morning.
Appreciate that, Eddie.
Pardon me?
I said we appreciate that.
Okay. Well, the reason I'm calling, I'm a casual NBA fan, okay? Mm-hmm. And when the Cat was in Minnesota, the whole knock on him was he didn't play defense. Offensive player, no defense. And the Knicks traded for him. And you guys think they're going to change his style. He's 29 years old. He is what he is. Thibodeau wasn't going to make him a defensive player. Genius.
Well, and that's why they're bringing in the guys that they are bringing in. They're bringing in two legitimate off the bench players that will change the dynamic of the second group of players. And of course, that's why they have Mitchell Robinson here. He's supposed to be the defender, the rim protector.
And Eddie, I don't think that Cat's going to get much better at defense. I think he is what he is, but I do think that he can be more consistent offensively and not disappear at times. And there were so many times throughout the regular season, the postseason, were like, did Karl Anthony Towns touch the ball in that quarter? Like, and I understand some of that is the team trying to shut him down and double
also
teaming
Jalen
on
Brunson holding on to the ball. A lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
But there's, I just.
Jalen Brunson doesn't score 35 points, you know, without having his share of shots.
Indeed. I mean, that is part of it, too. I just, you know, there's some times where he gets the ball down low and dominates and pushes his way through and gets to the basket and he's unstoppable. And there's other times where he's just bitching for fouls and falls on the ground and he takes forever to get up. And then it's just like, there's two completely different
noises
people.
He makes on the court. God, Jesus, what is that? What is that?
I don't know, man. I think sometimes people single out a lot of things with him and put him in montages and it paints him in a certain light. I just want him to be as good as he can be. That's all. I want him to reach
his. What are those noises? Sounds like Al.
It's strange.
Are you watching this happen?
It can be odd at times. But he's the key, man. I have to say it. He is really. Yeah. Sort of like that.
Yes.
Sort of like that. Anyway, but yeah, so we will see. I'm actually, you know, very excited for the beginning of this season to see how different they look under Mike Brown, if at all.
Well, I mean, this is the $50 million question, you know, is your point guard going to play differently and is he going to play quickly or is he going to do like what we love him doing? I mean, like he can get a shot like Clyde used to be able to get his shot. Like he doesn't play a lot of defense either. And anytime he's playing a taller player, they go right to him.
Yeah, no, it's a problem, both those guys. There's no two ways about it. You know, one of their biggest problems is the two guys that they need to win a championship both are close to zeros defensively. It's a fact. You got to somehow overcome that.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.
You know, CBS Sports Network was just showing some videos of Al on his vacation out in Bozeman, Montana. He's got mountains in the background. He's got deer. He's got a geyser.
Yeah.
And then CBS Sports Network, you know, cuts to New York City, hazy New York City right now.
Yeah, I mean, he does have a hooded sweatshirt on. It looks cloudy in this video.
But, yes.
It's going to be, as whoever was doing the weather for us during the break said, uncomfortably humid today, which is not fun. Don't like that. I do love summertime and the heat, but the uncomfortably humid is something that I would prefer not to have.
Right.
But that's the way it's been.
Move.
That's the way we're at. I can't. I don't want to move. Yeah, uncomfortably humid. The thing is, you need a pool or the beach on the uncomfortably humid days. And we're not going to have that today, but we're going to have a fun day regardless. But yeah, I'm not moving. I'm not going anywhere.
We just like, we never got the weather in the 70s or the low 80s.
And it'll happen in September. That's when it's going to happen.
September and October, yeah.
October, yeah. You'll get some 70s in October. But yeah, that's when it's going to happen now. But yeah, it basically went from 58 and rain every day to 90. Yeah. Skipped right over spring. All right, Jerry, what's going on this hour?
We're brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. What's going on this hour? More things that are going to bore you. The All-Star game last night. I give you Kyle Schwarber's third. I don't have to.
He doesn't. No, no, no. This is all he's got here. You know what I'm saying? And some people want to know about the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm not sure, to be quite honest.
Well, you did have 5 million people, I heard you say, watch the home run derby.
Six million people
watch the home run derby.
That's pretty good.
I think it's very good.
Yes.
We went and looked the numbers for the NBA playoffs. They were averaging 3 million a game. So
okay.
We made 6 million for the home run derby. Pretty impressive, yeah. I would say.
And not you terrible. And I both thought that they presented it really well.
I did. I did think it was good. How about this? I give you Clayton Kershaw. So a few of him, he got that whole Legends pick. So he pitched the second inning. They had him mic'd up. I thought it was actually kind of, really cool. Here's the first one.
How hard was that one? 91?
It was an out.
All right, going cheese again.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you and Paul Skeens are pretty much the same guy.
Right down the middle. I'm so glad he didn't swing. Okay, I'm going curveball here.
Okay.
Oh, that was short.
It was just a cool way to watch the game and listen to it. And he did strike out Vladimir Guerrero Jr., which was very exciting for him. And then he got taken out by Dave Roberts. Here he was afterwards talking about being the Legends pick.
You don't ever want to be like a sideshow. You know, you just want to be a part of it if you deserve it. And, you know, once I kind of understood that I wasn't taking anybody's spot and that it was just like, you know, whatever they call it, Legend pick, whatever. It just was It was a little uncomfortable, but now that I'm done with it, it was awesome.
It was awesome. 6-6, by the way, was the score of the game before they did the swing-off, which the National League did win. Here was Aaron Judge. Lots of praise from all the other players, as you can imagine. Very cool experience.
The guys at this game tonight are the best, so you know, to hear that from that group, that's what it's all about, just having some respect for your peers, because you know, 30, 40 years from now, they're not going to remember the numbers. They're going to remember how you were, you know, as a teammate, as a competitor, you know, and how you treated people. So that's, you know, definitely the highest honor right there.
He did ground out to David Peterson in this game, a ground ball to Francisco Lindor, threw it over to Pete Alonso. This was Lindor, his first All-Star game as a Met.
It's great. I'm blessed to be here. Honored to represent the New York Mets fan base, because they were the ones that got me here. I enjoyed tonight. Now, on to the rest of the season,
exactly right. And that doesn't pick up till Friday. I was saying to some, maybe it was Fliegelman yesterday, they got rid of those Thursday games where, like, you know, they would have the 3 days, I guess, and then but it's Friday for the whole league. So a couple more days without baseball, and then we are back to it. The Jets did sign Sauce Gardner, 4-year extension, $120 million. So they got their two guys locked up. I think both are, what, 2030? Does that sound right?
Yes. Yep. Yes. You know, he's got to be pretty happy about that as Malik Nabers. You know, a couple years, he'll be getting a contract extension, assuming that they continue to get him the ball. If Garrett Wilson can do what he did with 8 different quarterbacks. If I were Russell Wilson, I'd be looking Malik Nabers' way.
Oh, of course.
Every single play.
Well, 100%. He's even talked about that, too, about how special the kid seems to be.
He is. And you want to stay in a lineup, get that kid the ball, and let him go make plays for you.
Exactly. Trey Smith of the Chiefs, their guard, gets 4 years, $94 million. I got some things from golf, very interestingly enough. So you've got the final practice round. They're in progress right now at the British Open before play starts tomorrow. I thought this was funny. So Justin Rose is out there. They go to the first tee, and this is from the RNA online on YouTube. And they're having this conversation about how he played at the U.S. Open. And then the guy, whoever is with him for the RNA, asks him, whoever he's playing with, about his shot. And this is golf. This is how, I don't even know why he kept talking, but.
What's the key to this tee shot, Rosie?
You know, stay out of the bunkers. Like every link's hole, really. But yeah, there's a bunker on the right, 270.
Looks like 5-wood for him, bringing it in, so he's trying to hit it up the left half.
I know you got to be quiet.
Yeah.
But just wait a second.
But that's a guy who...
He gets it, I know.
Right, he wants to hear nothing in his backswing. So, I mean, it was funny when we had that outing at Bethpage, and Matt Martin was on the tee of 17, the par 3, and this garbage truck comes by, and he doesn't back away.
Yes.
And then the caddy goes, that was impressive. He goes, you know how long I played in Nassau Coliseum?
Exactly.
He goes, well, noise doesn't bother me.
Right. And you play these other sports, you know, you got to take a free throw. Guys are screaming at you, and they've got, you know, pictures of naked women in front of you, and they still have to make the shot. So what the whole thing with LIV is kind of cool, and they've done it in certain parts with the PGA Tour in Arizona. Tyrrell Hatton, was, so they did this thing where they've got 160 yards. They have to try to get as close to the sign as possible. And Hatton got, you get three shots. He hit 59, 62, and 62. Then you took out any club you wanted, had to try and hit the sign. So he took out a 3-iron.
Bad. Bit left, bit left. How does that feel?
Disgusting.
Okay. This guy is my new favorite one. And then here was his last attempt.
Go, oh, it's good. Oh, it's good.
Too much.
Did it hit?
No, it carried it.
I think, listen, you have been particularly average in that challenge, but that's okay.
Average, he actually finished second, I mean, just, which was just funny.
Listening to the English describe these things.
Get you ready for the open.
Oh, get you ready for the open is right.
I agree with you. It really does. So, and the cool thing about that was all of his shots, like that one didn't hit it. It went right over the sign. It's amazing how good they are. And then from the world of YouTube golf.
Mm.
So your guy, Grant Horvath, you like Grant Horvath?
Of course.
So
he's the golden boy of YouTube golf.
So I guess he was given an exemption to play in the Barracuda Championship, to which, no thanks.
So the reason I will not be playing in a PGA Tour event is due to the rules and regulations around media rights and filming during tournament play of a PGA Tour event. And basically that means I was not going to be allowed to film my round during tournament play.
And post it on YouTube. So he said no. I thought that was interesting.
I mean, yeah, I thought he was going to say, I do not want to become a PGA Tour player because I don't believe I've earned it.
No.
That's what I thought he was going to say.
Well, he asked Scottie Scheffler about this when he played with Scottie, and he said that. He goes, I don't know if I deserve this. And then Scottie goes, you absolutely do, because all the eyeballs that you bring into the game, and this is, you know, and so then he was like, okay, you know what, that makes sense. And then he decided, I guess, He never had designs, at least from what I heard, to be like a tournament player.
No, he flat out said he doesn't like the pressure of playing.
Right, so for him, it's like, if I can't film, there's no point.
You know how Clayton Kershaw said, I didn't want to take somebody's spot with this Legends thing, and then when I found that I didn't, and now that it's over with, it's pretty cool. I mean, would Grant Horvath getting a sponsor's exemption be taking somebody else's spot that's been trying to get onto one of these, you know, tour events?
I don't think so.
The way I always understood it was there's a certain number of exemptions a tournament can hand out, which has nothing to do with the guys trying to qualify.
And I understand why you would want to have him in there, just simply because of the content he has created and the eyeballs that he's brought.
He's partners with Mickelson now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that, but I don't know how many guys are grinding it out, like, you know, on the Corn Ferry Tour or somewhere else, trying to get there. And then here comes a guy that, you know, isn't going through the process that you're going through, but he is doing something that is quite interesting and has a lot of eyeballs, but he may get a shot in front of you. I mean, that would probably tick me off, but I don't know.
Who's the guy? Is the guy's name Hatter? I can't think of his name. My son watches him. And it shows the grind of trying to qualify and how much money he spends going from tour, mini tour event.
That's what I'm talking about.
Very difficult.
I mean, like, I understand the promotion side of it for sure. Yeah.
Ben Hatter, I believe, is his name.
But I also understand that there are a lot of other guys out there that we don't see that are trying to do it the way that everybody else has done it.
And I'm pretty sure that he talked to Scotty about that too. And Scotty said the same thing. You're not taking somebody's place like that. It's going to go to somebody else, a sponsor's exemption that didn't earn it as well. So you might as well take it.
Right.
I think that for those that are grinding and don't get there, that's tough. You know, this guy is also more interesting and bringing more eyeballs to the Barracuda Championship than some guy we never heard of who's grinding out on the DP World Tour.
You know, popularity.
That's the way that it is. It's the way the world works.
No doubt. Now, you were talking about the Knicks just a couple of minutes ago, and I actually had this and wanted to play it for you and forgot until I heard you mention Mike Brown before.
Yes.
I mean, this is you like.
We're going to have to focus on this thing one day at a time. One practice at a time, one shoot around at a time.
Right,
I'm trying to get better each and every day.
Right up my alley.
That is your type of guy right there.
Pandering already.
Which I thought was funny. And then the last one I have for you is sort of baseball, sort of hockey, as the two cross over. This was Pete Alonso 2 days ago talking about how when you've got guy gets hit, charges the mound, what happens? Here's Alonso.
If there's one rule I could change, so I don't think people should get ejected after charging them out or fighting. So I think it should be hockey style. So no teams, no nothing, because that's when people can like seriously get hurt. So I think there's a rule. If you want to go out and charge them out, then you should be able to. But if the pitcher or hitter or whoever charges, if they don't want to fight, they take a knee. And then they don't have to fight. But if someone charges them out, it's 1v1 hockey style. And then that's it.
I watch this. I can't tell if he's serious or he's joking around with the reporter.
It sounds like he's serious.
It sounds like it. He looks serious, but that sounds so stupid. Take a knee if you don't want to fight?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he really thought about this, and this was his answer. And when he proposed it to certain people, like, what if a guy doesn't want to fight? Well, okay, well, maybe he takes a knee. I mean, he sounded 100% serious.
He did.
I mean, this is a man who also was carrying a man bag down the red carpet. Now he wants to fight people. I mean, he's sending mixed signals. I don't know what's going on here.
He's sending mixed signals. And in the WNBA, Caitlin Clark, a groin injury, though the Fever beat the Sun 85-77 before she left the game. 14 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists.
Let's go to Joe in Parsippany, who just wants to talk about something we were just talking about. What's going on, Joe?
Morning, guys.
Hey.
Missed you guys last week.
Well, we missed you, Joe.
I missed you more, Joe. I want to play some golf together. I play at Deer Run Golf and Tennis Club in Lincoln Park, New Jersey. Would love to have you out. Would love to have you out.
Well, listen, I love to play, so we'll keep calling.
Let's do it. So Grant Horvat, I feel two ways about it. Grant Horvat's definitely taken somebody's spot away. Like, they've given these spots to, like, the young, like, 16-year-old kid Miles Russell that's like a stud, and like all these amateurs, and Jackson Koivin from Auburn gets the spots a couple of times. So he's definitely taking somebody's spot away. But how stupid could the PGA Tour be? They're not even going to have to pay Grant Horvat. And think of how many guys are going to tune in, and ladies, how many new golfers are going to tune in just to see Grant Horvat? You know,
and all young, and all very young, by the way. So the majority of his audience is younger than I am. Where they're, you know, the 20-year-olds or teenagers, and they really, really enjoy him, and that's where he's very popular. So, yeah, it's idiotic. I mean, I don't know if it's like opening up a can of worms thing.
Before we get crazy and start accusing the PGA Tour of this, you got to remember that there are a lot of people, I mean, not a lot of people, a lot of companies that are spending a lot of money to have the rights to these and to show.
The Barracuda Championship? Well, paying all that money for the Barracuda?
I don't know what the Barracuda. TV rights.
No, the TV rights, though.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about TV rights. I don't know what they're spending and what the, you know, what they're able to show somewhere else. I mean, like, you know, these things are very much protected because they cost a lot of money to be able to acquire.
Yeah, but this also sounds like something the PGA Tour would do to itself. I mean, honestly, this it took them forever to start embracing some of this, and they still haven't fully embraced it. And then Liv is doing this whole thing with all these influencers. They do the duels. They're a third one's coming out with Fat Perez playing with Bryson DeChambeau. They get millions and millions of views, and the PGA Tour's still, you know, a little stuffy with the stuff.
Yeah, and how's Liv doing?
Well, digitally, a hell of a lot better than the PGA Tour. You know, I mean, they are. If you look at the numbers, you know, Phil involved, Bryson involved, all that stuff. They're wearing the stuff.
Those are digital different situations. I'm talking about how is the actual Live Tour doing with their TV ratings.
Mm. Yeah, they sell out their events. I mean, there's tons of people that go to them. And digitally, they do great.
Digitally.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of the future.
It just feels like the PGA Tour is like they figured it out a little bit with the little, like, what do they play, like 6 holes or 9 holes before the players, and like they figured it out a little bit, but just Boomer, I hear what you're saying, I respect that. I just feel like, yeah, this isn't a premier event. Like, figure out a way. You're getting this guy for free, essentially, and it's almost like another creator classic. That's the thing. And
yeah,
then Barstool's gonna do their thing. It's like just let him play.
I will tell you this. I will say this, and thanks for the call, Joe, and thanks for the support. The PGA Tour is getting a new commissioner, and he's coming from the NFL. His name is Brian Rolapp. And Brian Rolapp, you know, his job is to do what? Is to expand the PGA Tour, make it more popular than ever before. And the reason that the PGA Tour would hire a guy like that is because he's watched the NFL grow exponentially over the last 15 years into this ridiculous behemoth. And I'm not saying that the PGA Tour will ever come that close, but Brian will bring the secrets. Brian will have ideas. Brian will open up different avenues for the PGA Tour, and that's why a guy like he gets hired.
Yeah, and it is true that the PGA Tour is partners with, actually with Scratch and Chad Mumm to do the Creator Classic, which, they, you know, Grant was holding that trophy in the picture at CBS Sports Network put out, where they do have some of the creators. They did it twice.
And Brian will expand this whole thing and get away from what I would consider like the stuffiness and the bouginess of it all.
Yeah.
And open it up to more of a, you know, just a grander, younger, bigger audience.
Fun.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right.
I think they're going to look into a lot of, and they already are using a lot of different technology on TV so you can follow the ball a little bit better and see how far it's being hit, the club head speed, you know, the types of shots that they're using, especially at the Scottish Open. I thought they did a great job with the technology there, showing you how guys were hitting the ball and trying to get it to go where they were hoping that it was going to go.
Absolutely.
After it hit the ground. So, yeah. So it's only going to be expanded under Brian's leadership. You watch.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.
I was saying that Rolapp was going to become the commissioner as the CEO of the PGA Tour.
Okay.
And he is coming from the NFL. He ran NFL Network. He's been in TV. He's been in all sorts of media rights deals and things of that nature, which is something that obviously every sports organization wants to expand their media rights deals. And that's one of the reasons why they hired him. Jay Monahan will stay on it. So 2026, I don't know if Brian will ascend to that job. I would imagine he would. But this is a very good and strategic hire for the PGA. For
yeah.
Sure. PGA Tour, that is.
It's like taking Ben Johnson off the Lions staff and making him your head coach. That's
exactly
sort of what they're doing here. They're
exactly
finding the secondary guy in the most successful organization and bringing him in to be your number one guy.
And I'm sure there are a number of executives over there at the NFL offices, a number that we know.
Yeah, indeed.
That probably get contacted by headhunters all the time about taking over different leagues and different opportunities that, you know, maybe they don't take because they like working for the NFL.
Yeah, I know we know they love working for the NFL and they get paid handsomely, I'm sure, because the NFL is so successful. And it's a great living to have and a great place to work. Pat in Verona, New Jersey. What's up, Pat?
What's going on, guys? Love you listening to you. Make Lincoln Tunnel traffic terrible. How you doing?
We're doing great, Pat. What do you got for us?
I was going to say, you know, a lot of the stuffiness of the PGA Tour, I think, is what's getting in their own way. And a guy like Grant would bring so many more eyeballs to those broadcasts. Be able to see. My son's 18. He's going to UNLV in the PGA Business Program, but him and all his friends, that whole generation, that's all what they're watching. So if he was playing, that would have been huge. But I'll tell you, the one rule drives me nuts is seeing these guys have to play out of divots on the fairway. It's like, why can't they get out of their own way? You know, it's that kind of stuffiness that you don't have to go as extreme as Liv. I think there's a happy medium, but why should you get penalized for being right down the pipe and then you got to hit up, a sand trap, essentially?
that's funny, Pat.
You and I play together, I say, gee, take it out of there. Come on, we're gentlemen here. I want you to have a nice round of golf.
Exactly.
I don't want anything to adversely affect your swing. It's bad enough in the previous hole that you were in the fescue.
Yeah, right. And then I licked my golf ball and then my face blew up. But one thing I don't understand about you can't film the round. So he's not live streaming his round. What he does is he has his team film him, and then it'll come out like a week or two later, and it'll say, this is what it was like. Yeah. So having him play, having him film is not going to take away from any live viewers from anybody else. All it would do would get more people watching that event, and I guarantee you would see a spike. I mean,
you would just have to see the contracts that are written and how they're written and what is guarded and what's not guarded. That's all. And whether or not, you know, they may have said to him, you know, you could probably shoot some of this, but we have to make sure that what you're shooting, we're seeing. You know, they have sponsors out there. They have the media rights deal that the people are paying for. I mean, like, look, there's a lot of people that are paying for the right, the exclusive right to show that particular tournament or any tournament for that matter.
But they still have the exclusive right to show it. He's not live streaming it or anything. It's after the fact.
I'm just saying it's that seems like a very rudimentary way of looking at it, meaning not understanding all the nuances of the contracts.
But
that's
what,
all.
But what would be the downside of him putting
I don't know. You would have to talk to the people that he is talking about not allowing him to do it. I don't know what their concern is. I'm not really sure.
Well, that's why I'm trying to get to the bottom of, because it doesn't make much sense at all. I mean, so when they did,
let me just say, if they do, let me ask you this. Let's say they do the Buick Classic, and he's playing in the Buick Classic. I'm just making something up here, and it's the Buick Classic. He's playing the Buick Classic, and let's say Grant is sponsored by Ford, you know, on his channel or whatever. Is that a conflict of interest, you know, or a violation of the contract that Buick has with who's ever shooting that particular golf tournament?
Okay, but also you could say you can film, but you can't have conflicting sponsors. The fact that it's just like flat out you can't film the round, that's what he said.
Or maybe they said we needed to edit it. We need to see what you're shooting.
Which is totally fine. I mean, like I said, it's a lot of kids watching. It's as G-rated as it could possibly be. There's no cursing on his channel. There's nothing controversial at all. So
let me ask you this question. Who benefits more from the partnership? Let me ask you that.
100% the PGA.
So the PGA, now, all right, so got to remember, there's a lot of different entities here. So when we talk about the PGA, the Professional Golfers Association, and the ones that are hosting the Ryder Cup,
yeah,
that's not the PGA Tour.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we know the Masters is not the PGA Tour. Right. We know that the U.S. Open is the USGA.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different entities within the golf community.
Yeah.
All right. So if Grant Horvat is at a PGA Tour golf event that is basically costing millions and millions and millions of dollars, and he gets to use that platform to promote what he's doing.
Yeah, and see, this is where you're off on this, and where I have more experience in it is the YouTube golf world. The PGA Tour benefits so much more. If you look at these videos that he's put out, Phil Mickelson has become relevant again because of Grant Horvat and pairing up with him. This guy is a young superstar. He puts out a video. 12 hours later, it's got a million views.
They're not
going to get a million people watching a Barracuda event without him or anybody else.
I know. I'm not shooting down Grant Horvat's popularity. I'm not saying that.
But he doesn't need this. He doesn't need the Barracuda to promote himself. He really doesn't. If he did, he would play in it without filming. He doesn't need to, he does enough stuff.
Well, I mean, if he doesn't need it, then why does he need to video himself?
Because it's content, and he doesn't have to. He's not doing it. So, you know, that shows you right there that he doesn't need it. He'll do something else. But he probably thought that his subscribers and viewers would be interested in him playing in the event and filming it and putting it out on his channel. That's why. So now they said no, so he'll do something else.
Well, you just saw a huge fight between two entities, the PGA Tour and LIV Golf.
Yep.
And that fight is still going on. They're trying to figure out a way for this all this to come together. And the best part about these things that are not PGA Tour related is that the LIV golfers, for the most part, are allowed to play in these things. And that's what makes it a lot of fun, because you bring the best golfers in the world all together on the same golf course. But the fighting between those two, and now you have another third or fourth entity that are these YouTube golf, you know, people that are extremely popular. I think I want to defend my brand. I want to be careful about, you know, the contracts that I have and the money that I am bringing in from my sponsors. And I want to make sure that, you know, that they're mine. I don't want to share them with anybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same thing with sales here.
Sure. I understand that point of it. I do think, though, that, and I'd love to be a part of these conversations. I really would love to hear how these things go. But there has to be a way to be able to come together and say, I'm getting something out of this, you're getting something out of this, and we can all benefit from it. And what it does is, the perception of it is that the PGA Tour doesn't understand the next generation. The PGA Tour is too stuff. All of those things people are going to say. And they're also, it's like a cut your nose off to spite your face spot. You know,
it's what's amazing to me is that you see all these kids on the PGA Tour now, guys that you may not have heard of, like Goddard or Maverick McNeely, or, you know, any of these players, these younger players that are coming into the the PGA Tour now and starting to make a name for themselves. I mean, that's the next generation of great young golfers. It's just that they're all almost all cut out or carbon cutouts of each other. Like, there's nobody that's separating themselves via their personality.
Not right now, no. As far as those guys, you know, I think Luke Clanton's a guy who's got a little bit of an edge to him and got a bit of a following when he was trying to earn his PGA Tour card. But yeah, I mean, you have to really be into like golf to know these guys and what their personalities are like, which is something that, you know, a lot more people know Joey Coldcuts than they do.
But maybe if those Luke guys right actually now. If those guys went out and played more with the YouTube guys like Phil Mickelson has. Like Bryson DeChambeau. You know, remember, Bryson DeChambeau, when we had Brooks Koepka in here, nobody liked Bryson DeChambeau.
It's the exact opposite now. Brooks feels irrelevant, and Bryson is the hottest ticket in golf.
Right, and remember the whole thing about it was Bryson, and it was the analytics, and it was the slow play, and it was driving everybody crazy. And Brooks was a young, up-and-coming stud golfer that could hit the ball country mile, and he just wanted to go out there and play. And he was more like a YouTube golfer than he was a pro golfer.
Yeah. I mean, there's a great video out now where it's Mickelson and Horvat against Bryson and Garrett Clark, who started good golf, and they're playing a 2v2 scramble, right. And they're just like, you know, and then Bryson's getting pissed off because Phil hit one drive further than him, and it's just like, and those two guys are live guys, and they come across tremendously well in these videos guys.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't think more people are watching live golf because of that. And I would think that if you were, let's say, and I don't want to speak for CBS, we're on the CBS Sports Network, and, you know, I've worked for CBS for 24 years, so I don't know their inner thinking, but I would imagine, because I know, just being around the NFL and what goes on around television in the NFL and the parameters in which CBS has to stay within because of the NFL rules, I kind of think that that's probably the same thing with the PGA Tour and NBC and ESPN and CBS. I think they all have to stay within a certain parameter within these contracts that are ironclad, you know, and that's why I think they try to protect them.